Let me introduce myself. I don't have a program or a kind of a menu of the day. I always feel at a disadvantage in a conference like this. When you come in and do a workshop, you have no clue of the flow of things or exactly where all you folks are. I hear that things are, you're having a dynamic and tremendously uplifting time together. And I can just pray that I just fit in to that flow in what we will do today. My name is Bill Flanagan, and I am an associate pastor at the First Presbyterian Church here in Colorado Springs. My official title is Minister of Single Adults. I have been working with single adults since 1971 in an increasing degree of involvement, so that now my job description is exclusively single adults. That's all I do, is coordinate a program, total program in our church to singles. In our congregation, we have about 1,200 single adults involved in our ministry from the ages of 21 to 93. And those folks are divided into three groups, by and large by age. And I'll just fire our groups at you, because I'm proud of them all and I love their names and hope you will too. The youngest group, or the group of the youngest people, it really isn't the youngest group. It's actually the oldest group, but it utilizes the youngest age, 21 to 35. It's called the growing edge. And then our newest group comprises singles from 30 to 50, and it's called the going concern. And then a group that began a number of years ago primarily as a ministry to widowed persons is called the New Dimension, and it is for single adults over 50. My job responsibility is to coordinate these ministries, to develop the leadership, in some senses to initiate the programs and the special needs that these people have. I find myself primarily in the role of an equipper, equipping people for the ministry. You'll catch this, I think, as we go through the seminar, but my basic philosophy is that a single adult ministry is not a glorified youth ministry. If you set a single adult ministry up on the model of a youth ministry, you're gonna blow the thing right from day one. I have a ministry with adults. Now, in some cases, it's two adults, as any pastor will, but I see primarily my position on the staff as being, I am the chairman of the board, but I don't hold any of the stock. It belongs to them. It's their ministry, and they own it. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself just a little bit, but the congregation I serve is an evangelical United Presbyterian Church, which to some of you may be a conflict and a contradiction in terms. There are a few of us. We are a church of just over 4,000 members in the heart of Colorado Springs. We reach this entire community. People from every neighborhood come to us. Colorado Springs is a city that has somewhat over 50,000 single adults in it. We are the kind of community that single adults flock to. And so we have a very unique opportunity to have a ministry and an impact on this entire city. And that's our vision, is to have a ministry and an impact on this entire city. Our location is in the center of the city, and we see, therefore, our ministry being to the whole city, not to just one of its suburbs or neighborhoods. At the outset, I want to share a few things with you, but I want the, since we're small enough, I'm glad this isn't a huge throng, that we can have some dialogue, and I would just say feel free to ask questions as we go. I want to really scratch you exactly where you're itching, and try to deal with the issues that are important to you. I want to say that I don't want to be an answer man. I find myself in the interesting position now. I began working with single adults in 1971. Very few people in the church were working with single adults in 1971. I didn't realize that at the time, but I found that just over the years, as I have in this particular place built some things and launched some things, I've discovered that not too many other people, at least beginning in the early 70s, were doing that. So I find that's why I suppose I'm asked to do these kinds of workshops around, because the Lord has put me in a place where I've been able to do a little pioneering, and I've made some mistakes, and want to share in outline form some of those mistakes, so that if the Lord is leading you to establish a single adult ministry or to further develop one, you can avoid a few pitfalls. I know best my model. I've tried to tell you the kind of church I come from, and I rather suspect that no one in this room probably can identify completely with my model. And I'm very aware of that, and so therefore don't want to try and say this is the way single adult ministry is done and superimpose the way we do it upon you. I'd like to just get a kind of a quick overview of who you are, though. It would be helpful to me. And if you wouldn't mind, I would like just to take a few moments of this time to have you introduce yourselves. I'd like to know a couple of things about you that will really not just to get acquainted, but I'm doing this for a very intentional purpose. I'd like to know where you come from, your community, if you're a pastor, and particularly if you're a senior pastor or if you're a member of a pastoral staff, and what size congregation you represent. That's an important question for the issue that is before us. Fred, we'll start with you. We're friends from before, and Fred's from Dallas. Tell us a little bit about your situation, where you are.
Fred Hyde, and I'm from Dallas, Texas. I'm an intern pastor at Northwest Bible Church, and I work a little bit with the Navigators in the community in a singles outreach. Northwest Bible Church is a 1,000-member church. We have about 2,500 in attendance. A singles ministry of about 200.
And a beautiful new sanctuary that they were building the last time I was there. Yeah, great. Yes, sir.
Jim Wright, Spearfish, South Dakota, college community, United Church of Christ, 300.
Okay, thank you.
Paul Bluder, I'm from Dallas City, Illinois. Our church is about 185, and I don't have a position there. I was a pastor before. Mm-hmm. But we're developing a singles ministry right now.
Okay.
Of about 15.
My name is Winifred Joyce, and I'm from Burlington, Iowa, and we just have a bunch of singles, and I think it'd be really nice if we had some kind of organization that we could, plan what we're doing.
Thank you.
I'm from Burlington, Iowa. Also, my name is Steve Anderson. The church we go to is about 900 to 1,000 people go there, to church there, and our singles ministry is, on our address list we have is about 40 to 45 people, but consistently coming to the thing we have now are about 25 people maybe. Mm.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Kent, and I'm from Knoxville, Iowa. I attend the same church as these two individuals, and in fact, all four of us.
You got a real delegation here, don't you? That's great. Yeah.
My mission, the church is in a rural area, about a 60-mile radius around the church. It's a small town.
Mm-hmm.
So people can drive to get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I'm Daniel, I'm from Burlington, Iowa, and I'm with the group here.
Okay.
My name is Lorraine Barber, and I'm a pastor's wife in a farming community of about 9,000 people. Our church runs about 200. We have no singles ministry. We have what you would call a glorified youth group for those that are out of high school, and that's as far as it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, too, so we split up to make the most of these hours here at Glen Ann.
Good.
Gather information that might be helpful to
others. Good.
Doc Kirk, Eugene, Oregon. Come from the assistant pastor there in charge of junior high through singles. And we come from a church of about 220, something like that. We had a singles group, and then the two that were under me, and then the two that headed it up got married, so we don't have a singles group anymore.
That's been known to happen in singles groups, yes.
But they came back and said, we'd like to start something else, you know, because they enjoyed that,
Good. Thank you.
We were all first in Manhattan campus, and I have been pastor of a Christian church, the college camp, and our church has, well, about 600 during the academic year, about 50 during the summer. And it's a big involvement in students, but we didn't have anything for the career at the time. So we've been, the last year,
Mark Storkin, from Northport, Nebraska, maybe about 20,000. And I'm on the staff of it's called Life Ministries Church. And it's only about 6 months old, about 30 people. But my area is a missionary to students, college through junior high.
Okay.
My name is Bob Sarks. I'm from Homestead, Florida. And I believe you came down there not too long ago. And I'm not a pastor, but I'm a member of the South Day Baptist Church, and we just took over the ambassador's class, which is singles.
How big a congregation is that?
1,400.
Good.
Okay, Dave. I'm from here in Colorado Springs, associate minister at Sunnyside Christian Church. And our attendance is 350, and including older singles and college age and divorcees, et cetera, we probably have 70 or 80.
Good.
Ben McQueen from First Christian in Longmont, Colorado. We run about 600 in Sunday school, and a good single young adult, the younger group going. We've had the same problem. We've had some good, we had a couple of good times going with the singles, and two or three of the couples ended up getting married out of that, and it kind of stopped things for a while in that particular part.
I'm Peter Johansson from the First Baptist Church in Modesto, California. We have a congregation of about 3,400. I'm minister of all adult ministries in the church. I have five staff men working with me, and we have a singles ministry on Sunday that ministers to about 250. And during the week, we minister to 350 to 400.
Hey.
I'm Gordon England, a new pastor in Broomfield, Colorado, Evangelical Free Church, about 250. And we have about 20 singles.
Hey.
My name is Don Macklis, and I'm pastor of church ministry at Whiteside Chapel in San Antonio, Texas, and in some Evangelical Free Church, too. And we run anywhere from 800 to 900 on a Sunday. We have a singles fellowship. It used to be a class and a fellowship of about 40, 45. And we have another singles group that comes out of another adult class. I don't know why they're separated. They just grew up that way. And there's a lot of college kids in that group. And that's about 40 or 50. And then we have I don't know what they call themselves. I think they're calling themselves awkward singles right now. I don't know if that's a really good name, but it's the
Yeah. That'll really attract people. Yeah. People really want to come to a deal.
I don't think they have really broadcast that name.
Yeah. I hope not.
It's the group of those who have been married and
Have you picked up what we're doing?
Yeah. Alan Porter from Omaha, Nebraska, and with the Omaha Gospel Tabernacle, Christian Missionary Alliance, and I'm the lay ministry with the singles there. We have about 75 singles maximum in Sunday school. I teach a Sunday school. My wife and I sponsor the singles. We call it the career singles. And the ages are from 20 to about 35. And then they do have another
classes that you graduate up to after mm-hmm. 30, actually, but they don't like to mm-hmm. go there.
Yes, I understand. It's weirdly after 50, then it really gets hairy. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. That helps me a good deal just to kind of see who you are and where you're from. And from just what you've said, I think I can get inside some of the questions and issues that you probably are bringing with you today. What I want to do is try to give you some principles. And I want to start assuming that you're beginning at the beginning and try to give you some handles that you can employ to get a hold of what the issues are and who the people are in your own particular situation. You seem to have, as you introduced yourself, a fair handle on how many singles there were in your congregation. I think that's really where it begins. Is with surveying your situation. And the question to that doesn't come out very clear. Can you see that? Maybe we could. I'm enjoying the view, but that's okay. I get to see it every day. It might be helpful to draw those if you wouldn't mind. Where are the singles? If you read any of the pertinent literature, and in fact there is a glut of literature being written and has been written over the last few years on singles ministries and the needs of single adults in the church. And I'm going to mention some of those, a couple of resources for you. Most of this literature starts out by saying that one third of the adult population in America today, over 21, is single. For every married couple in America today, there is a single adult. We are not talking about a minority group. We are talking about a vast army. And we are talking about an army of people that by and large, at least in proportion to their size, that the church has not reached. They are unreached people, by and large. They are people, many of whom have been in the church and who have left the church. And we'll get to that issue a little bit later on. So our market, as we survey it nationally, is phenomenal. Now, how do you find them? You begin to search your membership rolls. You perhaps insert into one of your Sunday bulletins a little questionnaire that may ask if you're a single adult. Drop this in the offering plate. Write your name on it if you want to. Indicate your sex, indicate your age, indicate what needs you have as a single adult that you would like to see the church meet. Single adult ministry begins not because you simply want to have a ministry with these people. It begins with the assessing and the surveying and the identifying of felt needs. And I will illustrate this a little bit in our particular context in a few minutes. How are these needs being met by the secular agencies in your community? I think you start right from the singles bars. Are there places where singles go in your community to make social contacts? Are there places frequented, particularly by single adults? Are there resources in your community? Are there secularly oriented groups for singles in your community? And what do these groups do? What particular needs do they meet? What kind of response are they getting from single adults in your town? One of the fundamental truths of single adults is that singles go where singles are. Singles go where singles are. And what you need to do in determining and surveying your situation is to sit down with some singles. Pull some singles that you know from your church. And here I would be diversified. Pull some singles who have never been married. pull some singles who are divorced, pull some singles who are widowed, because they're going to give you different answers. They're going to give you different input on both needs and just where they are in terms of the community. Get educated. The church is not educated now to the needs of single adults. It does not understand a lot of their needs. Let me give you two resources. I'll give you a good spectrum. One I'll give you is a Presbyterian, and the other is a Southern Baptist. So that's about as good as I can do to give you a good spectrum to operate. Here's the Presbyterian. Fairly new book called Reach Out to Singles, A Challenge to Ministry by Raymond K. Brown. Ray is on the staff at Whitworth College, which is really an evangelical Presbyterian school. And Ray comes from that perspective and here grapples with a lot of the realities of single adult life and the needs of single adults and how the church can respond to that need. Reach out to singles. Any of you who want to look at any of these resources, you can. A book we've been studying in our single adult committee is a book by Britton Wood. Those of us who've been working with singles for a long time have we have a little fraternity that we get together periodically at conferences across the country. Britton is really the kind of the godfather of single adult ministries. Britton is now at the First Baptist Church in Fort Worth. He was at the Park Cities Baptist Church in Dallas. And this book is written out of his experience at Park Cities in Dallas, which is just down the street from Northwest Bible. Britton's book is called Single Adults Want to Be the Church Too. Very helpful book. A book for a pastor to read and then study with a committee of people who are interested in launching or developing or improving a ministry with single adults in a local congregation. Very helpful book, and I commend both of those to you as excellent resources. Secondly, I see my pen's running out of ink. Try this one. Identify. Who are these folks? They, like many subgroups of our culture, have no leadership, they're not organized, and yet the people who market products, apartment houses, etc., will cater to them because of the vastness of their numbers. They are people. Beware of stereotyping single adults. Single adults are not, by and large, swingers. They are not, by and large, losers or generally out of step with the rest of the world. A vast proportion of their number have chosen not to be married. Not because they can't get married, not because they are not qualified in many respects, but they have simply chosen a lifestyle of singleness. That may change. We know statistically that people are getting married at a lot older age now than they were just a few years ago. They are people. They do, in large measure, have the same basic needs as other people. Many churches want to establish a singles ministry in their midst, often with a very subtle intention of isolating them from the congregation. Something like a leper colony, you know, outside of the normal structure of the congregation. These folks want to be worth something to the church. They desperately want to be included in the church's ministry. And I want to share with you, and every time I get a crack at a bunch of pastors, I say this, I want to tell you how many hundreds of single adults have talked to me about how they do not feel comfortable or wanted or welcomed in their church. And I'm referring here particularly to divorced singles. They are outcasts. They are now lepers in the Christian family that they have known. They want to be worth something to the church. They want to be utilized by a congregation. They want to be included, not just in the family, but they want to be included as full-fledged members of the body. They don't want to be pigeonholed or stereotyped. They don't want to be seen as second-class Christians. They don't want a program done for them. And that's why I'm aware of names and titles very much. I react to those. I see a lot of titles. I know that particularly in larger churches where they have a title like mine, I indicate to you, I am minister of single adults, not to single adults. There's a big difference in my mind between those two. In fact, I like the word with even better. I see myself as right in the midst of them. I see myself in the position of having to educate people all the time. I have people in our church coming up and they'll say, "Oh, Reverend Flanagan, it's just a wonderful thing you're doing with those people." You know, those people. They're appreciative of the ministry, but they're just a little bit put off by these folks. They're a little bit threatened by them. They have bought into a stereotype. They've bought into an idea that single adults are just a little immoral. They're sexually loose. A divorced woman is constantly in the process of making herself available to the married men in the congregation. Now, I may be exaggerating this just a little bit, but these are stereotypes that live in the church today. And they die hard. And they are a tragedy. And those stereotypes, which single adults feel very keenly, even though they're communicated very subtly, are reasons that are driving some beautiful, and I might add very needy people out of the fellowship of Christ's people. So we need to identify these people and begin then, thirdly, to discover their needs. A lot has been written and a lot has been said about the needs of single adults. Britton Wood, in his book that I just mentioned a few minutes ago, talks about 8 of the needs that single adults have. Let me just throw them at you very quickly. Here they are: acceptance, self-worth, loneliness, companionship, money, assistance with children, grappling with their sexuality, and discerning God's will for their lives. Now, if you look at those needs carefully, you'll see, hey, those aren't single adult needs. Those are just human needs. They're needs that you and I, whether we're married or single, all struggle with. And yet, in a single adult context, let's take one of the glaring ones, sexuality. The context of sexual need with a single adult and a married adult is a completely different context. Therefore, that need needs to be addressed and dealt with in a very different way. But it is a common need. And for us to insinuate in a church ministry that single adults have sexual needs and married adults don't, or that single adults have sexual problems and married adults don't, is a tragically ignorant presupposition. Get with some singles. Learn from them. Talk with them about their needs. Tonight at 7:30, I'm going to stand in front of 250 divorced single people. I'm in the midst of our 8th divorce recovery workshop in our church. And these folks have flocked to us because of a need. And one of the things I have to say right at the very beginning, when I speak to them and to their need, I lecture for 6 hours through this workshop. I tell them right in the first paragraph of the first lecture who I am, that I've never been divorced, that I've been happily married for 17 and a half years. And I address their need out of winning the right to be heard, because I have listened. Because I have earned that right through a lot of experience with singles, through counseling, and through through their own struggle to address them. And that they don't grant that right any more than kids will grant it in a youth ministry if you haven't earned it. And you earn it by listening. I have to be credible in what I say to single adults. I have to earn the right, you know, to speak to them. Yes, sir?
How was First Press, you had many, say, 250 divorcees or divorcees?
We have a lot more than that. That's just what we have in the workshop right now.
Okay. Yeah. How does First Press deal with that if they were Christian and they come to this workshop or in church, they find someone else whom they want to remarry? How does the senior pastor handle that? Or how do you
know? Okay. Okay. Well, you're opening a big question, and I was going to get to it later, but let's get to it now, since you raise it. I sense you're really grappling with the biblical issue of remarriage. Is that where your question's coming from, or I want to read you right?
Well, I don't know. I suppose yes, yeah. But assuming you have as many,
yes,
you know, there are Christians among them, and divorce are increasing among Christians.
Bill, that's right.
You might preface your remark by saying that not all those 250 people are from First Presbyterian.
No, they're not. No, they're not. It's an outreach of our church. But I would say that presently, in terms of members of our church, we probably have 400 to 500 members who are divorced right now in our church. So we're talking about a significant number of people. And I would say that we're still in the process of struggling with this issue biblically. Let me say that we on our staff have performed remarriages for divorced people with fear and trembling, with a great deal of counseling, with a few very serious presuppositions attached to that. We haven't worked this totally through. I'm in the process of writing a paper now. I have read most of the literature on this subject, and a great deal has been written. Some of you may be familiar with Dwight Small's book, The Right to Remarriage, and Andre Bustanaby's book I can't remember the name of the book, but there's a whole flock of them now, all of which I feel are inadequate. None of which I believe really get at what I think is the issue in the church today, which is how do you incorporate and integrate in a church that has a high view of marriage and family, that really wants to exalt God's design for marriage, and yet at the same time be sensitive to the need for those who have failed in that design, who have torn the fabric of God's, you know, will for them, and who have sinned and fallen short of God's ideal. How do you, in a congregational setting, exalt a high view of marriage and family, and at the same time, a compassionate, sensitive, caring, forgiving community for those who have failed? I find that isn't easy to do. That's a tough trick. It is the thing I'm struggling most creatively with right now. No book's been written on that subject.
Isn't sin, you know, sin?
Sure.
There's no good sin and bad sin.
No, that's right. That's right. Sin is sin. And the thing about the sin of divorce is that it's such a visible, blatant sin.
But if you exercise 1 John 1:9, then...
That's right. That's what I spoke on at the Divorce Recovery Workshop last week, because forgiveness is absolutely fundamental in appreciating the grace of God. And we believe, of course, the church is not a hotel for saints, but a hospital for sinners. And so we have welcomed you know, we have welcomed these people into our fellowship. They have a place. And yet we want to welcome them with biblical integrity, with calling sin a sin. I wait till the third week of the six-week workshop to grapple with the fact that divorce is a sin. I don't say that the first week. I used to, but I'm smarter now. I win the right to be heard a little bit more before we grapple with the reality. But the fact that that sin is covered with God's grace and His forgiveness if we ask for it and if we appropriate it. And I'm still working out what that means in terms of remarriage. When I read our Lord's words in Mark 10 and Matthew 19 and the other tough passages, you know, we haven't finalized that yet. We have not, though, adopted a rigid policy of no remarriage under any circumstances. Now, I respect, you know, that point of view, and I know many pastors hold it. But when we do hold that view, we've got to grapple with the fact that for some, that is saying to them, you really have no part in our fellowship. Your sin, in effect, isn't forgivable, isn't redeemable. That's the way they read that position. And it's pretty hard not to understand why they read that position that way. Though the Word of God at this point is explicit. And yet there are some real conflicts. And Small gets at that in his book. I appreciate where Dwight Small, I appreciate his bottom line. I have a very hard time with how he gets there. But that is a helpful book that seriously grapples with the biblical material. Yes?
Yeah, I don't mean this in a critical way at all. But this is my first conference. And I hear so much about this book and that book, and this book coming out, or this book to be out in January. I'm not really hearing that much about the Bible. And that's starting to concern me a little bit.
Well, I think we have to realize that the Bible, yeah, is the center book on which the whole church bases its life and ministry. And any church that doesn't, you know, is seriously in error. But I think we have to see, too, that the Bible is not an almanac that grapples with every issue and every question that human beings struggle with. At least that's my view. The Scripture is a window through which we see God. However, there are some issues that I think some of the literature is very helpful. I believe these two books are helpful in our understanding some basic needs. They're certainly not a substitute for Scripture. They're a supplement for it.
They're just tools that refer to Scripture and get you back into the Bible.
Yeah. Both these books take Scripture very seriously all the way through.
Jimmy was very quite a bit, especially in the divorce and remarriage. She was hearing some interesting things that I'd like to share in terms of just relating one principle to the gentleman that said 1 John 1:9 over there. I believe that's correct, but at the same time, in this area, we have two reasons for possibility of divorce as far as being committed from Scripture. 1 Corinthians 7:15 speaks about an unbeliever leaving a believer, and that's permissible. Let them leave, even though it better to stay in that because there's a ministry of sanctification that the children are holy under. And then in the other passage that speak about, like Mark 10 and
Matthew 19, adultery,
and 13 and so on, and also 1 Corinthians 7 early verses, it talks about being able to permit, and this is where we really need to be clear, divorce is permitted because of, and most people will say adultery. That's not the case. It's saying, in fact, it's not the word adultery, it's the word porneia, which means fornication.
That's right.
Which is any relationship illicit, okay, outside of the marriage relationship, whether it be two men or two women or two men. And then, but the reason is heart is the heart. Okay. Now, if you're following me, heart is the heart. The reason for it is because, like, if my wife goes out and commits adultery, and she comes back with a repentant attitude toward that, and I don't allow myself to forgive her, I can have a condition of hardened heart, which I believe is probably sin. But it relates to that 1 John 1:9, because you don't just 1 John 1:9 it, okay? You also have to confession. And repentance, there's a connection of seeing the sin as God sees it. And so then you have to go back and link it up where God talks about divorce as a sin, as abomination. So I think it's really clear that we, number one, talk about porneia rather than adultery as the second exception or the first, however you want to number them, and that we see sin in God's eyes before we just push it off.
It is a very complicated issue, I think. The more I have grappled with this material, the more I grapple with just the exegesis of porneia, the more complicated this issue gets. I think it isn't, at least at first, totally clear. I'm really grappling. This has been the toughest interpretive battle in the Scripture I've ever had. And I've gotten some, I believe, some insight, but I don't believe I've gotten to the bottom line yet. We could spend a whole seminar just on this issue. That isn't the intention of the seminar, but it is. I don't mean to belittle it, because it's an extremely important question, I believe, that any responsible single adult ministry must grapple with. Our single adult committee read Dwight Small's book. We're in the process of preparing a paper on this subject now that we hope ultimately will become a guideline paper of our session for our church, for those who come out of this situation and want to know what our church's stand is. Our stand is not clear-cut at this point. We're still working on it.
Can I ask one question?
Mm-hmm.
For my information, is anybody dealing or grappling with 1 Corinthians 7, verses 25 to 28?
Well, it is one of the texts that must be grappled with in reference to this question. You know, 1 Corinthians 7. Let me press on here, because I want to get to some other things here that I think are important for us to grapple with this afternoon. I noted that a number of you are from rural situations or small situations. In fact, the majority of you are. And let me just share some things that I've discovered in talking to singles from highly varying kinds of circumstances. They love large gatherings. Singles go where singles are. I said that a few minutes ago. One of the great attractions of our particular ministry at First Press is the fact that it's big. It is a truth that single adults, if they can, many of them want to leave rural communities. Some of you are in communities where single adults, you know, desperately want to get out. They want to go to a more metropolitan situation simply because they feel they have the potentials for marriage pretty well scouted out where they are and see nothing. So therefore, there is a migration, a real distinct urge to migrate to a place where there are possibilities. I find that in our ministry, single adults from all over America come to a place like Colorado Springs because it's a neat place to live. And they come to a ministry like ours, and they're very excited, and they talk about their little church somewhere, you know, and they see what we've got going, and they're real excited about that. Now, that's a fact of life. Perhaps some of you are going to come from this seminar with the understanding that maybe you are in a situation where establishing a single adult ministry is not the appropriate strategy. And I want to say to you that some churches should not have single adult ministries. But I believe every church should minister to single adults. And I hope you understand the distinction. It may not be the right thing for you to do is to start a group. It is the in thing to do now in churches to start a singles ministry. That's the kind of the thing across the land. I find that pastors come to these seminars and they, you know, there's a certain degree of pressure because, you know, if you don't have a youth ministry, you're really out of it, you know, in a congregation, and it's getting more and more so if you don't have a singles ministry, you're out of it as well. Yes?
I just want to make a comment. In our situation, the only way we really minister to the singles is that we have a Sunday school for them to go to where they can meet together as singles, And from that point on, the singles ministered to everybody else in the church. In fact, our pastor, our senior pastor, said that he has percentage-wise more singles working in a church and ministering to everybody else than in any other Sunday school class, and you have all ages married, you know.
But I'm speaking generally, you know, but they do. We're finding that exact same thing in our church, in Sunday school teaching and involvement in all areas of our church. Our singles have contributed so much to the life of our church, it's just incredible to think of our church without them.
Is there any base number like you should have that if you're going to try a singles ministry? The reason I say that is because as a single adult, I fellowship with these guys when I try. Mm-hmm. You know, 35, 40 miles just for Bible study and stuff like that.
Well,
that's why I'm trying to develop something in my own church.
Yeah, let me answer your question by putting it this way. I'm finding, and those of us who are ministering in a little bit larger circumstances, and I don't know if the factors differ somewhat in smaller circumstances, but we operate on the formula that our ministry, this is going to raise your hackles, some of you, has a 50% turnover every 6 months. A 50% turnover every 6 months. Now, that's part of your counting the cost. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, in your setting, say you have got, 50 people. 6 months from now, you're going to have 25 people. You have got to have the potential in your particular situation, if you're just going to keep even, to attract 25 new people in the next 6 months. To keep our thing going, we have to have 30 to 35 new people every week in our ministries. And we're doing a little better than that because we're in a growing posture right now. But that's kind of the mathematical formula that we have to apply for growth. So maybe that gets at through the back door the question you're asking. It's not so how many you start with. It's how many you can attract once you start. That's the question. And unless you are, in other words, if you start with every single you've got in your community, well, you better hold them, but you're not going to hold them because they change, they move. There's no one in our society more mobile or fickle than single adults. Yes?
Because you don't get bigger, does that mean you shouldn't have one? I mean,
no.
What?
No, I don't think that's true. I think there is a lot of the church growth theorists, though, say that no ministry stays the same number-wise. No church basically stays the same. You either grow or you decline. Now, I think there probably are exceptions to that. But I think it's something that needs to be assessed very clearly. I think that there are real problems with status quo ministries.
I don't even understand why you said that some churches shouldn't even start a singles ministry. Why?
Because they don't have in their community. That's right.
Grow.
That's right.
So what if you don't grow? Why grow? I mean, as far as numbers.
Well, because there is a natural attrition in any situation, and in a singles ministry, you have to grow dramatically just to stay even. You have to grow. It's just a fact of life.
Couldn't it be just as effective ministering to the needs of the people who are there? I mean, just because there's not that growth element or factor.
Yeah, but a year from now, none of the people that were there to begin with will be there. You see, that's the point I'm making. And sure, you can meet some needs along the way, but you've got to recognize just a fundamental reality that single adults move.
And marry.
You know, and marry. That's part of the movement, yeah. And if you don't realize that, you're dead. And leadership development is key to this. One of the corollaries to this is a lot of churches have a lot of females who are interested. And this is a real problem in singles ministry, is male-female ratio. Females almost always, you see, tip the scales, you know, in the majority over the males.
What is your ratio?
Well, it depends on which group you're looking at. You know, our younger group is incredible. It's about 60-40 now, which is unbelievable. Our older group is, no, not even that. It's about 90-10. The older you get, you know, of course, the actuarial tables, you know, of lifespan and so forth really catch up with you. But it's extremely difficult. And the issue here is, if you're going to have a whole singles ministry, you must attract men. You must attract men. I court...
Will you be sharing, you know, some ways that you attract men?
I'd be glad to right now, because it's a, you know, it's an important, it's really an important question. We are in an enviable position. We are attracting, you know, some very sharp guys at this point. And I'm not having to work that as hard as I used to. Now I'm able to isolate who the leader types are that just come to the ministry, over which I've had no responsibility at all, and I just help develop the leaders out of the pool of males that we have. And I don't want to in any way debunk female leadership here in singles ministry. But if your top leaders are consistently female, the men will leave. The men will not stay. You must have capable, committed, upfront type guys who will provide a positive image. And I have to use that word because it's an important word in singles ministry. I have traveled around the country and looked at various singles ministries and various churches. And I ask myself, if I were single, would I come to this group? And there's an awful lot of those groups that I wouldn't go near for anything, because they have what I call a loser image. Or, you know, they're full of sick people. They're not normal, healthy people. And boy, that image is important. It's vital that you integrate sharp, with it, Christian leaders in your groups. And if you don't have men, you're really hurting. What I do, probably the chief strategy that I've employed is with guys, when I see them, I invite them to lunch. Just the two of us. And we just sit down and have lunch together, and I share a vision with them. And I tell them that I discern in them the potential for leadership and include them in an integral way in that vision.
Where'd they come from? Where'd this guy come from that you took
up? Well, they used to come when I was really beginning, and I started with a group of about 30 in 1971. There weren't anyone in that group of 30 I wanted to take a lunch and share the vision with, to be honest with you. Nobody. One of the prime needs in that group early on was they, by and large, didn't even know Christ. So we had to get about evangelizing to begin with. But I went to the church, first of all, and found, you know, some guys who were in the congregation who weren't the least bit interested in singles ministry. And they weren't interested for the reasons that I've outlined. They felt these were a bunch of losers and didn't want to affiliate with them. And I met with two or three of them. These were guys who didn't really know each other, and I shared the same vision, and I incorporated some guys from the outside who were Christians to, along with me, share a vision and pray and meet together with the intent in mind to infiltrate this singles group and, in a sense, take it over. That's exactly what we did. We took it over. And in the process, and it was a very gentle process because there's a lot of diplomacy in that, other people in the group met the Lord. A few people knew that we were trying to take them over. They got angry and left, to my great relief, to be honest with you. They left because they just weren't with the program. And so we just kind of had to begin all over again. But I think you have to isolate those leaders, court them, and then spend extravagant amounts of time equipping them. As soon as I leave here, I've got a meeting in an hour with my president and vice president of the going concern. I spend extravagant amounts of time with those people every week, equipping them, going overnight with the officers, developing them as Christian leaders, studying the scriptures together, praying, just being with each other in developing our ministry.
Is your program real structured? I mean, like you have, like, you say officers?
And... Very highly structured, yes. But it's their structures, not my structure.
Okay. Like, I mean, did you get down, sit down with leaders or something?
Well, yeah.
How did you develop the structure?
Well, we developed the structure along our needs, along meeting our needs. What are the needs? What do people want to do? We have a social committee. We have a follow-up committee. We have an outreach committee. We have, you know, don't copy my structure, though. Let your needs dictate what your structure is. I have, in each of my groups, about 23 officers, see, who implement our program. But we have something going almost every night of the week. We have small group coordinators. One of our groups has 27 small groups in it. You know, the thing's way beyond me. I can't even monitor what's going on. I have to develop the folks that I know are going to develop along the right lines our ministry. And I give it to them. I work hard at giving it away. Developing leaders, let them take the ministry.
This seems like a very elementary question, but at the outset, you went around and it seemed like everybody had singles ministries of some sort or were thinking about mm-hmm. starting one. And then you went into your basic philosophy behind, you know, why singles have problems in the church. Are we working against ourselves by expanding singles ministries when the very thing that you talked about, we wanted to get away from the stigma of singles and marriage and try to incorporate the body, just like Joe Aldrich talked about mm-hmm. this morning. Why do our churches stigmatize those who mm-hmm. are, you know, on the other side of the track, and from a socioeconomic barrier, we're not opening up the doors of our churches to those that are really hurting.
Right.
Are we doing the same thing with the singles mm-hmm. ministry? I started the singles ministry at our church when I was a single.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm coming on staff, the first mm-hmm. paid staff member since the church started. There was only one senior pastor. But our singles ministry has grown. We have a body life concept. But there are a lot of those people in that group that I talked to before I came on staff that want to be a part of our church and want to be involved, mm-hmm. and we're trying to get them involved, but at the same time, they want to keep their identity.
Right. You know? Well, it is a paradox, and it's not an either or. It's a both and.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I'm convinced that any church that starts a singles ministry and just lets them go, they will isolate themselves from the church, and ultimately they will work against you. If you don't have a strategy for integrating these folks into the life of the church, you know, it won't happen. You know, that's a Colorado boomer. We have a very, very worked out strategy of integrating our people, getting them to join the congregation. But we know with many of the people we attract would not be attracted to our church initially. They are attracted to the singles ministry. And the singles ministry meets some needs that the church as a whole will not. When we have a seminar on marriage, for example, we're going to have on the 1st of November, an all-day deal about thinking about marriage, it is designed for singles. It's not designed for couples. It's designed for unmarried people. So we have programs particularly designed for unmarried people, and we reach out with those programs, incorporate people with those programs, and then hopefully integrate them into the larger body. So I think it's both and. I think the church has to consider single adult ministries, particular, specific programs that meet their needs, but always the idea this is the body reaching out to incorporate these people and ultimately to bring them into the whole. Also realizing not all of the single adults in our church are involved in our singles ministry. They're not. We have a number of singles, dozens of them, who go to couples-oriented classes because that's where they feel comfortable. And that's fine. That's fine. You know, and not all singles are attracted to single adult ministries.
Are most of your programs held in the church, like the seminars and so forth?
Yeah, because most of them, you know, are of the size that we can't hold them anywhere else in home. But we do utilize homes a lot for social activities. We use apartment house clubhouses. We do occasionally rent halls for this or that kind of program. So I would say we do utilize the church a lot, but we also, in the middle of the week, use homes an awful lot, because we have a lot of small group ministries. And I find that the atmosphere of a home or an apartment for a group of eight, say, is a lot more conducive than the church building.
Your seminars, for instance, on how recovering from divorce, would they be held in
the church? Oh, yes. Yeah, there are 250 people in that seminar. So, yes, it is held in the church. And a lot of people that come to that seminar haven't darkened the door in a long time. But
we held
yes,
our
it is.
First one, and we held it at the Holiday Inn. And we drew 85 new people, non-Christians, drew 200 total at the Holiday Inn. And we found as a result in the Holiday Inn, we drew a lot of men that we aren't drawing in the church to hold the same kind of...
Yeah. That's interesting. I've tried to inquire, tried to determine whether holding in the church is a detriment. It doesn't seem to be. Our newspaper advertising, about 40% of the people who come to our workshop come through our newspaper advertising.
Probably very
it's hard to say, yeah. It's hard. We have not found, though, having programs in the church, as far as we can ascertain, is detrimental to people coming. Now, I suppose there are a lot of factors that go into that. I want to. We're running. When is this supposed to be over?
4:30.
Okay. I want to make sure that we have plenty of time to grapple with your questions. Yet there's a few other things I do want to share with you. I was talking about meeting these felt needs. When you isolate, let's take divorce for example. We've talked about that today. Let me share with you. Kind of a personal experience that hopefully you could translate into a situation in your own locale. I was aware of the tremendous need of divorced people in our community and in our church. And I had done a lot of counseling with just dozens after dozens of people going through that tragedy of divorce. In 1977, in the spring, I went out to a single adult leadership training deal that the Garden Grove Community Church offered out in Anaheim, it's not Anaheim, it's Garden Grove. Schuller's, the cathedral had not yet been built, but anyway, that conference changed the ministry for me. I met Jim Smoke there, who was at that time the minister of singles at the Garden Grove Church, and who had just recently published a book called Growing Through Divorce, which he had written from a Christian point of view, but basically to a secular market. In fact, that book's being sold in supermarkets and so forth across the country today. I had never heard of the book. It was put in my hands at that seminar. I met Jim. We've since become very close friends. And I felt a tool was being put in my hand to begin a ministry with divorced people on a much larger basis than I'd ever had before. And I left knowing the Lord had spoken to me that this is something God was saying, go and do. And I don't think I ever came home from any conference more convicted as to a direction in my own life and ministry as I did from that conference. When I got back, I began to pray, and I prayed with a pad to give me some names. I came up with 50 names of people that I'd known in our church who had been through a divorce. And I wrote all those names down. I kept praying about them and finally came to 12 of those names, 6 men and 6 women, and invited those 12 people in June of 1977. My wife and I invited them to our home for dessert. Sent them all a personal invitation. Didn't tell them why. Found out when they all came, and all 12 of them came. Found out only 2 of them knew each other. They were basically strangers to each other. We sat around in those in our living room, very kind of an uncomfortable situation. People wondering, what in the world is this? Why are we here? And so I told them. I said, I know you're all wondering what this is all about, and let me tell you. And I said, first of all, I want to affirm 3 things about you. I said, first of all, you're all Christians. In fact, more than that, you're all Christian leaders. Secondly, you're all involved in the ministry at First Presbyterian Church. And thirdly, you're all divorced. And they kind of looked around at each other, and I told them about this conference. I told them about a vision that I felt God had given me for the ministry, and I said how inadequate I felt about that vision, about that ministry, and that I needed their help, and that it was my idea to, in the fall of that year, begin a divorce recovery workshop, and that they, if they were willing, would be the leaders of the small groups that would be a part of that workshop. I asked them if they were interested. The response was absolutely overwhelming. They jumped at it. I never saw a group of people jump at something quicker than they did. I said, well, when do you want to begin this workshop? I said, I want you to teach me. I want to train you how to be leaders, and I want you to sensitize me in terms of what a person who is going through a divorce feels. I think I have some handles on that from my experience, but I need further training. So we decided to start the next week.
How many men?
There were six and six. And I intentionally made it that way because I invited this group. This was not just open. This was by personal invitation. Well, we spent the summer together every week, falling in love with each other, just having a terrific time of growth and affirmation. And the Lord spoke to us. And we prayed. By the end of the summer, we were praying together, and we asked the Lord, you know, to give us 75 people in our first workshop in the fall. We advertised and so on and so forth. And 150 people showed up the first night, just flocking in from everywhere. And that ministry, you know, in many ways has revolutionized the life of our congregation. And these people, now there's over 100 people who have been trained as workshop leaders. And the ministry now is almost totally theirs. The only thing I do now is lecture. They coordinate it. They recruit the leaders. They help train them. The whole deal is done by them. We're on our eighth workshop now, and over 1,600 people from our community have been a part of this ministry and have felt its healing. And many, many, many of them have become active in our singles ministry and in the life of our church as a whole.
That's one of your main outreaches.
It is. It is. The point I'm making is find a need. If you find a need, if you press a button that really touches people where they are, they will come. They will come, and they will enrich you. They will challenge you. This has not been an easy ministry. It's been full of controversy. There are a lot of people in our church say, hey, what are we letting all these divorced people in for? I thought this was a family church. You know, and so it's not been without its problems, but God has blessed it in an overwhelming way.
Mostly Christians come to the workshop?
No.
Mostly non-Christians?
Yeah, the first few were more Christians because we were drawing more from our church itself, but now it's almost totally from the community. So I would say that the majority of the people who come are not Christians.
How many people make decisions for Christ out of that?
Well, let me put it this way: we do not overtly evangelize in the workshop. I tell them right at the beginning, I'm not going to preach at them. I am not going to exploit their vulnerability. But I also am very honest about who I am and where I'm coming from and what I believe. And so what happens is we don't, quote, evangelize in the more traditional senses of the word. I talk about the Lord. I use Scripture in the workshop. But I try really to stick to some very practical issues. But the leaders of the groups, we have 23 groups right now in this workshop of 10, about 10 each, 10, 11. Each of the groups has two leaders. There are 43 leaders, all of them committed Christians. And so people are becoming Christians all over the place, not in response to me, but in terms of, you know, how can I really find healing for my life? How can I really be whole? How can I ever find joy again? How can I, you know, how can I ever feel good about myself again? Well, those are the questions they're asking. And our leaders are saying, well, listen, I know how you feel. I felt that way once. You want to know how I felt wholeness? You want to know how I felt healing in my life? You know how what makes me feel joy now in the midst of all this? And so there's just an open door. There is a tremendous vacuum. And one of the things I'm finding with singles, particularly divorced singles, is they are open to the gospel like no one I've ever known. There's just failure hanging all over them. There's guilt hanging all over them. There's anger. There's all kinds of feelings that they can't deal with very adequately, and so they're open to God in a way that they may have never been in their whole life. So we're finding people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, committing their lives to Christ in a very beautiful, natural way through this ministry. Discover a need, pray about it, get a strategy, and move. and God will bless that that movement. I want to move on here to the development of that. I think this is a crucial point in the outline. I've talked about how a singles ministry is not a glorified youth program. Let them determine some of its directions. You gather around people that, share a mutual Christian commitment, and exciting things will happen as you develop program along the lines of need in your own particular situation. Let them know it's their program. If they think you're running it as a member of the staff of the church, they're going to be turned off. Junior high kids don't mind that. High school kids don't mind that. College kids to some degree don't mind that. Adults don't want a prepackaged thing laid on them. And I'll tell you, it's a costly ministry. It will cost you. If single adults are a part of your job description, you better be prepared to be stretched in terms of your time. Because once you win the right to be heard, they're going to be on the phone. They're going to want to spend time with you and for you to spend time with them. They will cost you. But I don't know of anything that's rewarded the church more than our singles ministry. It's interesting, even as you look at single adult ministry in financial terms, and I think it's appropriate to speak about this financially, for some churches here ought to really be considering staffing a single adult ministry, expanding staff to incorporate singles ministry. There isn't a ministry in the church that pays for itself financially more easily or more quickly than single adult ministry. And lots of times board of trustees appreciate, you know, that kind of logic. And it's true. Single adults do have money. And they do when they become involved in the church. And I say not all of them. Some of them are dirt poor. But there are a lot of... We wanted to bring a speaker to one of our conferences. I had a guy come in my office. I want to write a check so this guy can come. He wrote me a check for $500. Bingo, just like that. They do have money. And they, when they are committed to the ministry, they will give it. They really will. There was a...
I was just going to say, we did a little study last year. We had about 6% of our membership were singles. And they comprised about 18% of our giving.
Good. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I have a question related to this development. Mm-hmm. In our church, we have a small, relatively small number of singles. I'm talking about young singles. We have mm-hmm. one or two older widowers. The difficulty seems to be that the age span and maturity level of this group is kind of incompatible. And the older ones, who are more mature Christians, early 30s, mm-hmm. Tend to be less social and... they're very opinionated about what they want. Like, they have a Bible study, they want to take on a heavy, you know, mm-hmm. they want to study a Schaefer series or something like that. And a lot of the younger people who really have needs, mm-hmm. they can't even catch on. And so when you throw it open to them to design something, those who come mm-hmm. to the top in leadership design something that's inappropriate for the whole group.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just had 30 more people, you'd break into two groups and run. But what do you do in the meantime?
Well... Yeah, you got to assess that very carefully, because we find that in our situation too. The more your thing grows, the more needs are suggested, and I think you have to realize that there's got to be some age graduations in the structure of a program. That people in their 50s and people in their 20s, it's neat to get them together on certain occasions. We just had a brunch with our Growing Edge group and our New Dimension group on Sunday. And we had people in their 20s and people in their 70s and 80s having lunch together. And it was beautiful. It was neat. And they loved it. They enjoyed each other. But to think of really programming those groups together, you know, in a ongoing sense would be ridiculous. There's no way to do that. So you have to realize that maybe the older people, depending on how many you've got, put together the Schaefer series for them, you know, program along their needs, and recognize that there are many facets to that program. There will have to be.
Now, if you're starting a younger group, though, and you're trying to develop a program for them, so, for mm-hmm. example, say you have 10, only 10 to start with,
mm-hmm.
that are out of high school, say up to 25,
mm-hmm.
do they resent, for example, like the sponsorship of a couple that is sensitive to singles needs and oriented that way?
No, they don't. If they feel that they're inviting that couple to be a part of their of their fellowship. It depends on how it's done, I think. It depends on so many factors. I often wonder, though, why it's a couple all the time with singles. We do have some couples, and one of the guy that teaches the going concern, he and his wife are involved. My wife is not involved too much in the singles ministry. She's involved in other facets of the life of the church. It can be a couple, but I think whoever comprises your kind of coordinative leadership needs to be there, not because the staff says this is these are your advisors. Those are all youth ministry terms, and I would junk them. I would scrap them with singles ministry because I don't think they work. They have to be invited by the singles. If the singles don't want the couple, or don't, you know, can't go with the couple, they'll be gone. They'll all vote. They'll vote with turned backs and walk away from the ministry, and the couple will be standing there wondering what happened. So they have to be there because they're wanted to be there.
We had a situation where our singles had both a Bible study, a fellowship, and a class. But we have a number of rotating lay teachers that are available for any class. And we have a home class configuration on Sunday, electives on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And their class, over the last few years, started to diminish because all the singles, as they got older, wanted to take advantage of the other home classes. So they started migrating to these other classes. But at the same time, the leadership was very hesitant to drop that class because they felt it was a real rallying point in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And a class was a point, but when people walked into a church, there was a singles class, they could make contact and then go to Bible studies fellowship.
Yeah.
They made a decision. It wasn't forced upon them in this last year. In fact, the leadership was very concerned that they not be forced to make that decision. They dropped the class. And it's only been a month and a half, and we're very anxious to find out what happens as well as the singles leadership. They don't know if they'll be able to exist as a fellowship and a Bible study. But their people wanted to take advantage of the other teachers, and they started leaving on them. And there were some that were loyal, like the officers in the field, that stayed in there. But the class just got smaller.
Well, just like any other ministry in the church, people are loyal through personalities, and the personalities that you have in many ways dictate where people will go and whether they're married or single, you know.
That you do have a class?
Well, I think philosophically and pragmatically, you got to decide what the center of your program is. For us, it's classes. The Sunday morning thing is a happening. It is our happening. It's not a worship experience. It's a class. It's a teaching experience. The Growing Edge will have about 150 in class on Sunday morning. The Going Concern will have about 275 in class on Sunday morning. And that's a teaching thing, and it is the happening out of which all the other facets of the ministry kind of meet together. And it's an exciting time. And people feel, wow, this is my family. This is the gathering of the body that identifies itself by whatever name it has. And I do think that they're going to rally around something. And I think to have the social activity, for example, the center of your ministry, raises some problems as to what is the chief focus of what you're doing and where you're going. And we have social activities. Our strategy in our ministry is to create kind of a microcosm of the Christian life and to incorporate into our program structure all of the elements of Christian living. Good food, good times, good study, good fellowship, a lot of laughter, a lot of prayer, a lot of growth, you know, and we try to program all of that stuff. And we believe that the class is the appropriate center for that, and that works for us. But there are other ministries that have, you know, slightly different focus. I think you have to develop the rhythm of your own thing, and that's going to vary from church to church. But most churches, particularly evangelical churches, that do have an emphasis on classes, and I think probably most of you have some kind of emphasis on classes and on teaching, that I think, you know, that works. Let me conclude by talking about a few of the problems I'd call this last thing problems, challenges, and maybe we can talk a little bit about structures. I've talked already about mobility and transiency. That's a fact of life. Secondly, I would say, don't build a program on entertainment. I know there's a big singles ministry in Denver. I don't think there's anybody here from Denver. That's what I call a dog and pony show model. You know, they bring in so-and-so to do a concert, you know, and they bring in some big gun to do speaking, and they have a lot of big meetings where you get a big auditorium, you set up a lot of chairs, and you have spotlights and sound systems and all this kind of jazz, and dazzle the troops. And everybody claps, everybody thinks it's great, and everybody goes home, and nobody gets to know each other. Now, in a smaller situation, you're not going to have that problem, but it's interesting, our outside speaker budget in our ministry is practically zip. We do very little of that kind of stuff, bringing in the big guns or the concerts or the special music. We develop our own. We develop our own music. We develop our own teaching ministry. Our goal is family, body. Body life was mentioned here a minute ago. That is our model. That's what we're after. We believe that single adults can be better entertained by going to a movie or going to a disco or going to something that's got a lot of flashing lights and expensive sound systems. There are businesses in the community can do that a lot better than we can. We don't try to compete with them. If people want flashing lights and big sound systems, let them go to a disco. We've decided that there's another need that nobody else or few other people are meeting that we need to meet. That the single adult that is tired of the bar scene, that's been ripped off by all of this secularized stuff, wants some authentic community. And that's what we have sought to provide. And we've found that that's the right button. That's what people want. And they come. And so we try not to entertain them as much as we try to reach out and touch their lives with healing, with wholeness, and with fullness in all that the Christian faith is and all that it means. Another structure that I think is important if you're thinking, conscious of you're all writing notes, when you get home you don't remember anything I say, but you remember stuff you wrote down. And that's important. A single adult ministry must be geared to the newcomer. We make elaborate use of name tags in our ministry, colored name tags. The people that are already incorporated into our groups will have a blue name tag on Sunday morning. All of those who are visiting for the first and second time have a yellow name tag. They can be spotted in an instant. Our follow-up people, because we have so many people coming, we've got to utilize some means. We have a personal letter that goes out on Monday. We have phone calls. We have personal follow-up. We work hard at making people feel welcome. We gear up, particularly on Sunday, to newcomers. They are our lifeblood. We need them. And we want, you know, them to have their expectations, their best expectations, satisfied. We work very, very hard at that. Two other points, then I'm through. First, you need to expect and adequately deal with some controversy and hot potatoes. I had a letter from one of the pillars of our church not too long ago. Some of our singles who were new to the group, who had been to a social activity, and they were after the social activity, they left and were in a local restaurant and bar. And one of our pillared, really one of our elders and his wife were eating dinner in the adjoining restaurant, and it was a Friday night, and they heard singing coming out of the bar. And the singing was lifting up the glories of First Presbyterian Church in the bar. The group of our singles were celebrating, and they were glad for First Press and making that very clear in their music. And this couple sitting out in the restaurant just about died, you know, hearing this sound about our church emanating from the bar. Well, I'll tell you, I got a letter from this guy that would just singe your socks, you know, about dragging the glories of 108-year-old First Presbyterian Church, you know, through this situation. He was really ticked. And I'd use that as an illustration that single adult ministry isn't going to make everybody happy. And I called him, called on him personally, and tried to help him understand, you know, who we were reaching, and that just possibly there were some very positive ramifications to somebody singing about our church in a bar, and that that I didn't entirely view that with a negative response. That that in fact, I thought it was neat, you know, that these people felt this, and this was coming out of their expression of thanksgiving to what our church was beginning to mean in their lives. But there's going to be controversy.
Did you win
your call? I don't know. I think it was 14 to 13 his favor. You know, he'd pretty well made up his mind, you know, that this was something totally inappropriate. And I tried to just help him I think he did see another side of it. And initially there wasn't any other side to it. It was just his side of it. But that's the kind of thing you get into. And it was kind of a humorous and in a very isolated kind of thing, but people are going to react to what you're doing.
Specific steps to incorporate singles into couples in the body with couples.
Yes, yes. In many of the ministries of art, particularly the music ministries, the choir. Boy, it's been a neat place where singles have become involved with couples, and in some of the classes, in teaching Sunday school. We have a lot of single Sunday school teachers, and all those leadership development programs, then, as our Sunday school staff is trained, those are experiences with married and single people. Parenting. We've done a lot of stuff on single parenting because we have a tremendous amount of children now in our Sunday school who are children of single parents.
A lot of it is the sensitivity of just the married people in the church. How they really receive or don't receive the single people, invite them over for dinner and stuff like that.
Some of that's going on. We've taken some stabs at adopting grandparents and things like that, you know, that are not really clicking like I'd like to. I find that some of those things you can't program. They just have to happen, you know, and they are. That's right. That's right. And they are happening. They are happening, and beautifully so. The last thing I want to say is, and this is really important, if you are a staff person, and that was one of the reasons I asked this, don't begin a singles ministry without the enthusiastic support and encouragement of the senior pastor. If you don't have him with you right out of the starting gate, and he is supporting you, encouraging you, aware of some of the conflicts and some of the problems that are going to come up, and support you through those problems, don't start out. He needs to be with you from day one. He needs to share the vision. I'm in a place where I've been very, very fortunate. You see, it's interesting, that letter that I got from the elder, that was unusual that I got the letter. Most of the times, they don't write to me. They write to the senior pastor. See, if they got a complaint, they don't go to me. They'll go right to him. And we have a very beautiful understanding relationship together. And without his support, there have been a lot of times when I'd have been in big trouble. And that's, I think, a very fundamental thing that anyone on a staff, any volunteer, any staff person needs to have with a senior pastor.
What about the relationship with the board today?
Board, too. We have a single adult committee that is a committee of our board, our session. And you bet, that's also very, very, very important. Well, thank you all for coming, and hopefully this was helpful to you this afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to take a little of your time, and hopefully it will result in some neat things in your own situations. God bless you all in your ministries.